Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more roar for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, for your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, with your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud walled cabin eyes were watching through the night. Many a manly chest was throbbing for the blessed warming light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the banshee's lonely crew, and the thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon, and the thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. It's November the 4th, 2010. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest. Okay, this week I'm really rushed. I had to hold off on printing and mailing the Northwest Observer until after Election Day on Tuesday, so I could write a lead article about the results. And on Halloween Day, I actually began the writing part of Northwest Novel No. 5, and so I'm having to at least try and allocate a little time to that every day. The result is that I didn't have as much time as usual to compose a script before the Thursday deadline, and I'm going to have to ad-lib most of this week's broadcast, and it will probably show. Now, there's been no real progress this week in the Edgar Steele case. The trial was originally supposed to have started on Monday, November the 1st, but they've now postponed it until March the 7th to give the government more time to break Steele psychologically and make him cop a plea, or else so they can kill him in his cell through medical murder of some kind, which shouldn't be too hard considering the fact that he's not yet a full year out of major open-heart surgery. So this week, we'll start with a brief comment from Gretchen the Librarian in Connecticut about her first meeting with other white nationalists.
Good evening, comrades. Today I'd like to talk to you about having actual group meetings. This weekend, I had the opportunity to have a group meeting with two other comrades from my state. And honestly, I would have to say that it was the most significant day of my life, in the sense that when you get together with your comrades, you can find out about your mutual resources, and you can receive encouragement and advice in a way that you simply cannot when it's something like a message board or emails to someone. So I would most definitely encourage everyone to get in contact with people on the list. And if no one has contacted you, then contact someone in your state, perhaps someone nearby, and start having these meetings, because you'll find people that are like yourself. You'll find people that you can be honest with, and it's just an amazing experience. You will feel so empowered by these encounters, and you'll feel a sense that you can do more. You'll end up wanting to do more because you'll be so inspired by the people that you meet. So please get involved with the people on the list. And remember, avoid large gatherings, keep the gatherings small, and be cautious about it. Maybe ask Harold if he knows any of these people, and he can provide you with information if you're unsure about anyone. So, okay, thank you, and thank you for listening this evening.
I'm constantly getting emails and letters from people wanting to know what they can do if they, quote-unquote, can't come to the Northwest right now. Well, in point of fact, there are very few people who really, honest to God, couldn't come to the Northwest right now if they really wanted to. Now, we're a movement of the poor and working class, and in most cases, coming home to the Northwest involves giving up nothing more than a crummy furnished apartment in some multiracial tenement. Well, as with anything else, if the will truly exists, the way will be found. Now, you people who, quote-unquote, can't come to the homeland right now say you want to know how you can help while sitting behind your computers in Texas or Florida or New Jersey or Toronto or wherever. Okay, fine. Here's how. I've already told you that we need people who can design leaflets and cards and small items of handheld propaganda for the Northwest Front. We still need those. I've gotten a couple of sample items sent to me via attachment since I first asked for you guys to get creative on this 3 weeks ago, but I need to see a lot more. I can't guarantee we'll actually be able to do much of anything with them quite yet, because unlike the internet, it actually requires money to print these things. For example, we have an absolutely beautiful Northwest Front brochure, one of the best small hand items that I've ever seen from any group, and it's been sitting on my hard drive for almost a year now. It really should be printed up by the thousands on nice, heavy, glossy paper, and it should be being passed around all over the country. But until we can actually raise some funds, it's going to keep on sitting there on my hard drive. Now I'm going to ask for something else, something that there is really no excuse for all you computer geeks out there not providing. Here is a way you can salve your consciences. Now, you know you should be here at my side, but you're not. We both know why, and I'm going to use that guilt shamelessly as a stick to beat you with and make you help despite yourselves. I need to hear from any and all of you who have the necessary skills to build actual websites and who can produce reasonably professional-looking YouTube videos. I recently came up with a special YouTube project, which I hope will finally break us out of the bubble and get us some kind of system media publicity. And I want as many people as possible working on this project. Our own NF video virtuoso, Colonel House, is of course working on this as we speak. But when he's ready to go live, I would like to use his video as a kind of template or blueprint and see how many of you can do as well or better. Expand on it. Elaborate on it. Ratchet up the power of the visual imagery. Tweak the message. My idea is to flood YouTube with as many versions of this particular Northwest video as we can. Following the same general script and the plot line, using the same musical background, but do it under many different accounts and titles, so that the Jews who run YouTube can't possibly run around the internet pulling all of them offline and canceling every account that has a version of this piece. And of course, when they do that, we do like Colonel House does every time YouTube cancels him. You open another account and you get it back online within 24 hours. Now contact me privately at nwnet@earthlink.net for further details. Now another brief note. A few months ago, we had a group of four young guys in Pennsylvania, all of whom were very gung-ho about migrating to the Northwest homeland. Now, I'm not going to go into great detail about this, since my purpose is not to rag on anybody in particular or badmouth any one individual. In fact, that's almost never my purpose in anything I say or do. What I do is I observe and report on phenomena that occur within the movement, since many of those phenomena have to do with character. I have to do that because character is one of our biggest problems. In some respects, it is our biggest problem, in fact, and no one else will talk about it. So that's what I'm doing here. I'm not, quote-unquote, attacking anyone here. I am observing a phenomenon and drawing conclusions from it. Anyway, long story short, of these four musketeers who were so all for one and one for all, and who were ready and set to hop on the plane to the homeland, two of them have now wandered away in search of other, maybe not entertainment, I hope not, let's just say they've wandered away in search of something more fulfilling. Now, this happens a lot, so I'm well used to it. For one thing, it's part and parcel of who us white boys are. We are capable of being intensely interested in anything for 15 minutes. Our characters and our attention spans have been socially and mentally engineered that way by the Jews. And when you grow up with a television remote and a computer mouse in your hand, and you can constantly change the electronic images flowing into your cortex with the click of a button, then it's genuinely hard to concentrate your attention on any one thing or idea for any length of time. I get it. But this has actually been a movement phenomenon for a long time prior to the internet. A lot of people come into the Northwest movement, or should I say cyber come in, and for the first few months, they're all hot to trot, wild with enthusiasm. Yeah, Harold, I'm saving my money and I'm packing my shit and I'll be up there in just a few months. Oh, yeah. And then reality sets in. And all of a sudden, these people decide that the Northwest isn't exactly what they were looking for. Now, this usually coincides with the sudden realization that, oh, my God, this is indeed the real thing. This guy Covington is serious. Yes, I am, and a lot of people find that genuinely shocking. They're not used to dealing with somebody who's actually serious about all this. so part of it's probably down to me. I freak a lot of people out. They realize that the Northwest migration is serious, that it involves risk and inconvenience and a lot of physical effort, and it's a genuine life change and life commitment. Pastor Robert Miles used to say that when people in the movement finally were confronted by the real thing, they wouldn't recognize it, and they'd do their best either to destroy it or escape and evade it. Turns out Bob was right. And when this realization hits a 21st century white boy, that all of a sudden here is something real, something serious, something for the permanent record, whether it's over a woman or a career or a political or a racial principle, his usual reaction to any demand that he gets serious about something is to run for the tall grass. Now that's just the way that white boys' minds have been hardwired for the past couple of generations. Some of you may remember there's an old rock song that says, "You know, my heart keeps telling me you're not a kid at 33. Well, unfortunately, these days a lot of us are, maybe even most of us. And kids run away from anything involving hard work and serious commitment. That's one of the differences between a child and an adult. The point I'm trying to make is this. You guys remember that I've been talking about local organizing and recruiting for the Northwest Front over the past several podcasts? Well, this business of the suddenly disappearing comrade is one of the phenomena you're going to run into as a Northwest Front organizer, and the first time it happens, it can be upsetting and depressing. You think you've got a really hot prospect, a potential comrade who's serious-minded and who seems to have the right stuff and who can go the distance, and then all of a sudden he flakes on you. He backs off. In some cases, he or she literally flees screaming into the night, and I've had that happen before. It can happen virtually without warning. I once had it happen in the middle of a long-distance phone call. Yes, really, the woman was fine when she called, and then about 10 minutes in, I could sort of feel her brain start to give way, and by the end of the call, she was screaming at me to take her name off the mailing list and never contact her again. Swear to God, you could actually hear her mind, her intellect, and her willpower suddenly slip away like the sand giving way under people's feet in that old movie Invaders from Mars. I had this vision of space Jews hiding underground in a flying saucer and suddenly vaporizing the earth beneath their feet as you hear this weird music. If you ever saw the movie, you know what I'm talking about. And as she falls into this hole where the slimy things could get at her and put the little metal control chip in the back of her skull and turn her into a pod person robot controlled by the Martians, it's almost like that in a way. You guys will get that feeling a lot when this kind of thing happens. And it's not a totally inaccurate representation of what does happen. You think you have your fish hooked, but all of a sudden he slips off the line and he swims back down into the overflowing toilet that is America, and he hides under a rock. He decides that life and all the sludge and the excrement and the goop of Obama's America is preferable to crawling out onto the land and having to gulp in the fresh air and exert himself a little. Okay, bad metaphor, but I think you guys get what I'm saying. If you're lucky, then the person who does the Houdini act will at least leave a note or give you some kind of stumbling, half-assed rationalization or excuse, if only to try and convince himself that he isn't really cutting and running because all of a sudden he realized what he was getting himself into and American narcissism and self-absorption took over, not to say self-preservation. But sometimes they don't even do that. Sometimes our people just plain disappear. The internet especially facilitates that, as I'm sure you can see, but actually it's a pre-internet phenomenon. Time and again, down through the past 40 years, people I've known by correspondence and in person as well, sometimes guys who stuck with it for years, have simply vanished one day, moved and left no forwarding address, phone disconnected, email accounts shut down, mail comes back undeliverable as addressed, poof, Scotty's beamed them up to the Enterprise. Now sometimes there's a reason. Sometimes they're just on the run from the bill collectors or the ex-wife's lawyer or the police. But for most of these cases, there's never any explanation, and I think that many of them involve burnout or some kind of mental breakdown into despair. In the case of new people who come in like lions and slither out like worms, I think it's a kind of mental circuit overload. We are so confused in our minds in 2010. We've never been given any moral compass, and the sudden attempt to install one can be disrupting and unsettling. Sometimes, like a body rejecting a transplant organ, the mind can reject an attempt to suddenly install a moral compass where there was none before, or else that Jewish narcissism reflex that's been hardwired into us kicks in. The idea that it's all about you, that your whole life is about looking out for number one and forget any kind of idealism that might place anything above the altar of your own self, be it another human being or all human beings of your race. Or else, more simply, these guys all of a sudden realize with a rush just what the hell they're getting themselves into, they panic and they just plain cut and run. The reason I'm getting into all this is that if you're going to be an organizer and an activist for the Northwest Front, you need to understand, sooner or later, this is going to happen to you. You're going to have people simply disappear on you without explanation. You will work a prospect for months, and then all of a sudden he wakes up and he flakes on you, or else he simply vanishes. Expect it. Learn to take it in stride. It's simply something that happens. It happened with 2 out of 4 of the guys in Pennsylvania I mentioned earlier. However, in all fairness, I think I need to let you folks hear from 1 of the 4 who didn't flake. You've heard from him before, actually, Mike from Pennsylvania, some weeks ago. This is what he sent me this week. Dear HAC, no, please do not remove my address from the list. I would still be happy to meet with anyone interested in the Northwest Front or white nationalism in general. It's very unfortunate that these 2 individuals have decided to opt out of this. Yes, it's disheartening, but perseverance is a virtue. Although these 2 guys no longer wish to be associated with the Northwest Front, I still believe in it, and I'm still continuing with my plans to migrate, even if I must do so alone. As you've said yourself in the podcasts, we can't make anyone else brave. They have to find it within themselves to do so. I realize that this must be very frustrating for you, considering all the BS you deal with and have dealt with, and believe me, it's difficult for me as well. I'm currently at a university that I greatly dislike attending, removed from all my friends and family, but still just trudging on with my only hope being to do the right thing in a world that has gone hideously wrong. I can't control the actions of others or make decisions for them. If they don't have what it takes to migrate to the homeland, then we can't give it to them. I'm still hoping to make a scouting trip to the homeland, but I'm unsure when that will be. When I can form a concrete plan to do so, I'll let you know ASAP. For now, keep me on the list. Take care, Mike. Yeah, a lot of 2010 white boys are flakes. It's who we are, but not all of us. I haven't heard from the 4th individual involved yet, so I don't know if he's gone with the wind or not, but even if he is, 4 came in and 1 has made the decision to stay and commit. That's 25% pass rate, which for our movement isn't bad. Guys, what I'm asking you to do by way of organizing and recruiting is hard, and it can be dispiriting and depressing, especially with people around you periodically going up in a puff of smoke, but it can be done. First music break. I understand that Rush and all the neocons are now trying to claim Iraq as some kind of military victory. Never mind the fact that the enemy was never defeated, and he's still armed and in the field. But hey, that's Jew propaganda for you. You know, one of the problems we face is this myth of American invincibility. There is this pervasive idea that America has never lost a war, obviously put out by people who don't remember Vietnam. But it's getting a little bit ridiculous these days. Nor is it true that America never lost a war before Vietnam. It's a simple fact. In the War of 1812, the mighty U.S. of A. got our clock cleaned, and not just by the British regular army who burned Washington, D.C., but also by the Canadians, eh? They're not all Doug and Bob McKenzie's, you know. No one much remembers 1812 today, but basically what it was an attempt by the United States to conquer Canada. Our forefathers invaded New Brunswick and Ontario, and they were badly defeated and run back south of the border. What's this got to do with anything? Not much, but it gives me an excuse to play a Canadian song from the War of 1812. This is Stan Rogers.
What clothes then, where to get them, there's the fellows to compare. What colonels, regimental, shining women, call them fair. I am Alexander Mackintosh, nephew to the laird, and I do disdain men who are vain, the men with powdered hair. I command the Nancy schooner from the Moy on Lake St. Clair. On the 3rd day of October, boys, I did set sail for there. To the garrison at Amherstburg I quickly would repair, with Captain Maxwell and his wife and kids in powdered hair. Aboard the Nancy, in regimentals bright. Aboard the Nancy, with all his pomp and bluster there. Aboard the Nancy, oh. Below the St. Clair Rapids boats, I sent scouts unto the shore to ask a friendly Wyandot to say what lay before. Amherstburg has fallen with the same poor UN star, and militia sent to take you here, 50 horse or more. Well, up comes Captain Maxwell then, surrender now, I say. Give up your Nancy schooner and make off without delay. Set me ashore, I do implore, I will not die this day. Says I, you go or get below, for I'll be on my way. Aboard the Nancy, surrender, hell I say. Aboard the Nancy, it's back to Mackinac, go fight. Aboard the Nancy, oh. Up comes Colonel Bobian then, who shouts as he draws near. Give up your Nancy schooner, and I swear you've not to fare. With that, your Captain Maxwell, sir, spare yourself his tears. Says I, I'll not but send you shot to buzz about your ears. We fired as we hauled anchor, boys, and we got underway. But scarce a dozen broadsides, boys, the Nancy did them pay. Before the business sickened them, they bravely ran away. All sail we made and reached the lake before the close of day. Aboard the Nancy, we sent them shot and cheers. Aboard the Nancy, we watched them running through the trees. Aboard the Nancy, oh. They bluster, roar, and pray. Nine sailors on the Nancy, boys, made 50 run away. The powder in their hair that day was powder sent their way by poor and ragged sailor men who swore that they would stay. Aboard the Nancy, sixpence and pound a day. Aboard the Nancy, no uniform for men to scorn. Aboard the Nancy, oh, aboard the Nancy, sixpence and pound a day. Aboard the Nancy, uniform for men to scorn. Aboard the Nancy, oh. Hey!
Now on to the midterm elections. Yes, I know, electoral politics is a useless dog and pony show with no real relevance to anything in the real world. Now remember, the purpose of democracy is to prevent change, to make sure that essentially the same people always run things. But sometimes it can be fun to watch, and it can even serve as an object lesson for those whites who have the wit to learn from it. Now, the late Governor George Wallace of Alabama used to say that there wasn't a dime's worth of difference between the two parties, but that's no longer the case. Not quite. Oh, they're both part of the same system, and they serve the same interests in the long run, but that doesn't mean that it's all this one big omniscient conspiracy that sees all, knows all, can do anything, and is totally invincible from now until the end of time. The Anglo-Zionist establishment has never been as completely monolithic as we've usually viewed it. Now, the enemy we face is not comprised in one big huge conspiracy with everybody in on it and interlocking as we like to think. The enemy is not like we see on TV and in the movies, with armies of secret James Bond-style FBI agents to track us down and all kinds of high-tech toys that make it impossible for us ever even to contemplate any kind of resistance. In real life, they're just a bunch of clock-punching bureaucrats who can't even concoct a credible frame-up of a 65-year-old man just out of open-heart surgery. I didn't say they were ineffective. Ed Steele may still be convicted by a jury of drooling morons, but it's not credible. Only an idiot would believe anything the FBI says, but unfortunately most juries are comprised of idiots and niggers. You might say that the whole liberal democratic system itself that we live under now constitutes a kind of ongoing conspiracy against the white man because it's geared towards a number of specific goals, mostly having to do with money and the personal enrichment of the people involved, and all of which involve destroying the white male as an effective component in society, because white males tend not to tolerate the kind of behavior that the Jews and the government habitually engage in. It's the nature of the beast, so to speak. A rattlesnake doesn't bite you because he's involved in some sort of great world snake conspiracy. He bites you because it's his instinct and his nature to do so, and that's what it is with the Jews and with the people that are attracted to democratic government. They're just bad people and they do bad things. I'd like to read you a quotation from a Scottish political scientist and historian from the 18th century named Alexander Tyler. A democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until the people discover that they can vote themselves money from the public treasure. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidates promising the most money from the public funds, with the result that a democracy always collapses over loose fiscal policy followed by a dictatorship. The average age of the world's great civilizations has been 200 years. These nations have progressed through the following sequence: from bondage to spiritual faith, from spiritual faith to great courage, from courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance, from abundance to selfishness, from selfishness to complacency, and from complacency to apathy, from apathy to dependency, and from dependency back to bondage. End quote. The United States of America is now in that final stage. However, things like these midterm elections do hold out some cause for hope. In the past 30 years or so, factionalism has taken over among our lords and masters, and they can no longer play nice with one another, and that's something we can turn to our advantage. While the red state, blue state dichotomy is still largely hype, it now contains some elements of truth. Liberal Democrats and conservative Republicans really do hate each other's guts, especially in the media, and they are, in fact, trying to destroy one another. Now, it hasn't reached the point of actual bloodshed yet, but it will. The upper crud are squabbling over who gets the boodle, an all-powerful government or the huge multinational corporations. And as the boodle shrinks and even the powerful can sense that the whole ball of wax is coming unglued, the squabbling has gotten nasty. There is now a high level of good, honest hatred, fear, and loathing for one another among the ruling class, and that's good. Good for us. The November 2nd elections have produced a situation which will lead to gridlock, paralysis, and bitter faction fighting within the regime. And the less this regime can get done, the better for white Americans. Even better still will be when the Republicans take over the House of Representatives and their many oversight and investigatory committees, and get that all-important subpoena power, and start investigating the Obongos. Do you remember all the fun and games with the Clintons after the GOP took over the House in 1994? If it wasn't for that, we might never have known what a completely rotten apple barrel Bill and Hill presided over in the White House. Hell, we might never even have known about Monica Lewinsky. Now, the next 2 years are going to be pure hell for all the white people who are caught in the middle of the Obama Depression, but they're going to be more fun than a barrel of monkeys to watch on TV. Well, for those of you who still have TVs and who aren't living under a bridge. The biggest question on my mind is, will Daryl Issa or anybody else in the new Congress have the balls to subpoena the state of Hawaii for Barry's birth certificate, if there is one? And once they establish that Barack Hussein Obama is not constitutionally entitled to hold the office of President of the United States, what will they do with that information? Will any of those 535 yay-saying leeches actually dare to impeach his caramel-colored ass and drag him out of that White House where he has no business being in the first place? I doubt it, but we'll see how that plays out. There were some disappointments, true. I really would have loved to see Barbara Boxer and that loathsome faggot Barney Frank and dingy Harry Reid as well go down. And although Christine O'Donnell in Delaware is a ditz, I would have liked to see her win just to hear the left scream and scream and scream. Plus, I'm one of these dinosaurs that just doesn't appreciate seeing a white woman abused and humiliated and insulted in public, no matter how ditzy she is. And what the Democrats and the Rhino Republicans did to her pissed me off. Of course, a paralyzed U.S. government will be able to do even less to end the Obama Depression than this one, and that's if they want to end it, which I have serious doubts about. I think it's significant that the Jew Ben Bernanke chose the very day after the election to announce the fact that the Federal Reserve will begin quote-unquote, quantitative easing, as they've chosen to call the government printing money, adding $500 billion to the currency for the express purpose of buying up government bonds and T-bills, which is basically printing one set of worthless paper in order to prop up a second set of worthless paper. And that is so utterly insane that even someone who doesn't know anything about economics can see it. Hyperinflation, here we come. Now, the people at the Fed have to know this. I say yet again, printing money causing hyperinflation is economics 101, and they're fully aware of the fact. Now, this means that the United States government and the Jews who run the Federal Reserve are conspiring together to cause inflation. Why? Why would they do such a thing? Limbaugh thinks it's being done so that the additional funny money dollars in circulation will tweak the economic figures and it'll pass for growth. But needless to say, it will do absolutely nothing to provide employment and only cause the cost of basic commodities like food and gas and shelter to rise. And when the government runs out of money again, they're going to fire up the printing presses again. Things are horrible enough as it is, but can you imagine how bad things will become for normal people, even those who still have jobs, once the price of gas is up to $10 per gallon and a loaf of bread costs $8 and a pack of bologna costs $15? Or worse, like Zimbabwe, will we be seeing people walking around with $500 million bills in their pocket? I'm sorry, I can't resist reading another quotation to you, this one from H.L. Mencken, the Sage of Baltimore. And by the way, that's another name that anyone associated with our movement ought to know. Anyway, back in the 1920s, Mencken wrote, "The government consists of a gang of men exactly like you and me. They have, taking one with another, no special talent for the business of government. They have only a talent for getting and holding office. Their principal device to that end is to search out groups who pant and pine for something that they can't get and to promise to give it to them. 9 times out of 10, that promise is worth nothing. The 10th time, it is made good by looting A to satisfy B. In other words, government is a broker in pillage, and every election is a sort of advance auction sale of stolen goods. The balloon may indeed go up in the foreseeable future. Pity we won't be ready." You know, since we're talking about Congress here, I looked around for a music piece about political corruption. Couldn't find one I liked except for some Tom Lehrer songs. And since Tom Lehrer is a Jew, he doesn't get played on here. But I did find one about drunks. This is Mike Cross.
Sun wouldn't shine. I was walking down the street and I'm feeling too fine. I saw two old men with a bottle between them. This is the song I heard them singing. Lord preserve us and protect us. We've been drinking whiskey for breakfast. Well, I stopped by the steps where they were sitting and I couldn't believe how drunk they were getting. I said, old men, you've been drinking long. They said, long enough to start singing this song. Lord preserve us and protect us. We've been drinking whiskey for breakfast. Couldn't quit, so I drank a little more. Next thing I knew, there were three of us sitting there singing this tune. Lord preserve us and protect us. We've been drinking whiskey for breakfast. Well, one by one, everybody in the town heard our ruckus and they all came down. And pretty soon all the streets were ringing with the sound of the whole town laughing and singing. Lord preserve us and protect us. We've been drinking whiskey for breakfast. Yes, Lord preserve us and protect us. We've been drinking whiskey for
I said before the second music break that the balloon may be about to go up in the foreseeable future, but it's a pity we're not ready. That has to change. I'm going to try once again to get through to you folks and convey some kind of a sense of urgency about this Northwest thing when I say that we must be ready. And when this attempt fails, I'll try again next week. Get used to it, people. You're going to be hearing this song a lot. Francis Fukuyama's bullshit to the contrary, history does not end, nor does it stop, although every now and then it does get hung up for a while like a broken record. Events in North America are moving forward, with us or without us. Every dog has his day, and our opportunity will come, but it's entirely possible, and at this point, frankly, it's likely, that we're going to miss it. And if we do, then no one's going to stop the merry-go-round while we get back on. Something even worse will replace the United States. And okay, maybe it'll be some kind of Mad Max Road Warrior scenario, which a lot of us seem to think would be a good thing. It wouldn't be, trust me. Mad Max would get old real quick, and we need to see if we can not only survive ourselves, but at least let some kind of civilization and order survive with us. Right now, that's not on the cards. Playtime's over, people. Playtime should have ended years ago, but it has continued long, long past the point when we should have moved on to serious revolutionary politics. Let's recap. Given the material abundance and the relative stability of Anglo-Zionist society for the past few generations, most white males today have grown up in a kind of extended adolescence. Life is one long spring break of beer, partying, and carefree irresponsibility that never seems to end. Baby boomers and Generation Xers in their 30s, 40s, and even in their 50s act like kids following the script of an Animal House-style teenage gross-out movie. Their entire lives are devoted to acquiring ever bigger, shinier toys to play with. The string of broken homes, broken marriages, divorces, bankruptcies, addictions, bad life decisions, fads and diversions, and aimless hedonism that they leave behind is the most indelible mark of Jewish materialist man. Okay, granted, there are a few exceptions. Some white men are willing to shoulder their personal and civic responsibilities in life, true. But the clear and brutal fact is that they seem to be an increasing minority. This pattern of white adolescent childishness continuing far into adulthood, of self-centered egotism, viciousness, and general lack of character, has never been displayed so clearly as in the racially conscious community over the past three generations. Our self-appointed leaders, as well as a disproportionate number of our rank-and-file participants, have proven, almost without exception, to be deeply and fatally flawed men who have done more harm than good to the cause of white survival. We are a disgrace. What's worse, we're a fucking joke. Period. End of story. Nobody's afraid of us. Nobody takes us seriously, nor should they. We as a race have wasted the past 50 years in one long, endless childhood of playtime. We've squandered untold millions of dollars, thousands of shattered and wasted lives, and years of precious and irretrievable time. In return for this expenditure, we've received nothing at all. Indeed, we as a community are now carrying around a very heavy negative moral balance. We as a race are in a karmic hole so deep I shudder to think how the cosmos will judge us. That time is over now. The demographic clock has struck. By 2050, we will officially be a minority in North America, but out here in the real world, it will in fact be all over much sooner than that. Our average age will be so high that we'll be incapable of recovery as a species. The last white people will die out in the northern reaches of Canada around the year 2100 or so. A little more than a century from now, we will be gone. The generation of white children now being born may well be the last wave of births sufficiently numerous even to be called a generation. From then on, our path to extinction is clear. If we're going to stop this, it has to be now. It has to be through Northwest migration and the creation of a Northwest American Republic, if for no other reason than the fact that there is no other plan. The movement has had 50 years to come up with a strategy to recover state power and to save our race from genocide. The movement has failed miserably. Our only hope now is Northwest migration and a last desperate attempt to seize back some territory and acquire state power in order to give the remains of our people a refuge. Failure to recognize the truth of this now falls into the category of criminal negligence. There just isn't anything else. There ain't gonna be anything else. We cannot, dare not, waste any more time on the movement. And every one of you listening to these words knows that's true, whether you admit it or not, even to yourselves. Why do you think I'm so desperately trying to find ways for the Northwest Front to break away from the existing movement completely and begin drawing on the white community as a whole? I have begun this life-saving process as best I could, acting as one man all alone, with no money and no manpower. I've written and published 4 books which serve as outlines for Northwest migration, explaining a lot that needs to be explained, but which above all create and instill a shared vision of Northwest freedom for our people. On Halloween Day, I began writing a 5th. I have used the internet and printed media to advocate and recruit for migration. I've done every single thing I can possibly do as one man, all alone. If I don't get some high-grade help soon, we're out of the race. We no longer have infinite time. We no longer have endless fresh starts. I myself no longer have any more of these 4 and 5 year blocks of my life to give up on movement dead end after movement dead end, starting over and over again each time everyone runs away in a desperate attempt to find something to which you will finally respond. Besides, even if some new idea other than Northwest migration were to come up, we no longer have the option of starting over. The clock has run out on us. The bulk of us urgently need to change our thinking, and change it fast. For the past 50 years, the overwhelming majority of white people involved in right-wing and racial causes have not been revolutionaries, or for that matter, not even particularly radical. What most of, quote-unquote, our people have always been is what might be politely called strong conservatives or reformists. Less politely and more accurately, they're reactionaries. They are reacting to conditions of life which have become intolerable, and they're reacting as human beings naturally do to insult, oppression, and injury. They're lashing out in anger and hate at their tormentors. Now, this is entirely understandable, but racial resentment is not a political program or a worldview. Neither is economic self-interest, as the Tea Party crowd's about to find out when all these new Republicans go to Washington and then proceed to betray the people who sent them there. The uncomfortable truth is that our enemies have rather neatly nailed our asses. Most of us are simply haters. We're not Europeans. Few of us have sufficient geopolitical education and intellectual depth to hate an entire economic, political, and social system, however evil. That's too faceless and too abstract for us. Americans don't do complexity well. We live on junk food and junk politics. Analyzing and rebelling against an entire system of institutional tyranny and evil requires too much analysis and thought, and thinking hurts our heads. We've never been taught to think at all. We've been taught to feel, and that's not the same thing. The overwhelming majority of white people who are involved in right-wing and racial causes and groups don't want genuine systemic change. They don't want to change the system. They want revenge on the system, which is not the same thing. They get involved hoping to right their personal wrongs, not their people's wrongs. Put another way, most of us don't really want to change every aspect of America from top to bottom and turn it into something new. Most of us, if the truth be known, probably don't even see that much wrong with the system itself. It's what we were brought up with, and we prefer the devil we know. What we really want is for the existing system to work right, meaning work for us personally. We want the system to give us our props, as the Whiggers say. We want the existing order to keep its promises. We don't want to overthrow the establishment. We just want our share. We want the American dream, which was promised to us and which has not been delivered by Obama or anyone else. We want everything to be the way it was, or the way we think it was in some far-off, dimly perceived, idyllic past. We want all the good things in life that we have now. The money, the shiny high-tech toys, the SUVs, the football games on TV, the backyard barbecue, vacations at the beach or the lake, the massive consumption, that good old-time religion we learned at our mother's knee, mom and God and apple pie, the old red, white, and blue, and of course, the beer. And at the same time, we want to have none of the bad things. No crime, no drugs, no niggers, no Mexicans, no faggots, no feminist bitches, no lawyers, no scummy street corner lefties, no liberal talking heads on TV, no non-white faces on the tube or in the stores, and everyone around us looking and thinking like ourselves. Nothing wrong with that at all. Trouble is, it's not possible. Now, in this country, in this society, there is a name for white people who feel this way about the American dream. They're called Republicans. Now, this is one reason why I constantly fail. You folks, by and large, want the American dream. I don't. I'm not really an American, except by an accident of geography, and I never have been. Maybe it's some holdover from my immediately previous existence, which I have reason to believe was roughly in the right place at the right time. Maybe for some reason in 1953, my newborn soul didn't take a strong enough sip from what the Tibetans refer to as the waters of forgetfulness, and some of the good stuff, the old stuff, the right stuff, hung over into my present life. But I've just never bought into the American dream at all, not even from childhood. I want the Iron Dream. And since I'm not offering you the product that you really want, I suppose I shouldn't be too surprised if I don't make too many sales. But there's a problem. The American dream is no longer a viable option. It's gone. It couldn't survive in the real world for more than a generation or two, and that was in an all-white society. Things are going to get worse and worse and worse from now on, forever, unless we get our act together now Every one of us listening to these words will most likely die warehoused in some hideous old folks' home, probably murdered in the dark of night by our Nigerian or Filipino caregivers, smothered with a pillow because we complained or our throats cut for our IV. Now that is what America holds in store for us unless we stop hiding, stop running away, and step forward for Northwest migration. Out here in the real world, no matter what plan we use, we can only achieve anything like the results we claim to want through revolution, the complete reordering of American society from top to bottom by force of arms. And all of us know this. It's the biggest open secret in American politics. The entire political system is designed with one goal in focus: to prevent change. The entire political system is designed from the ground up to prevent exactly what we want to do. The only way to put an end to the horror is to put an end to the whole system. And Obama and his Jew crew ain't going to go gentle into that good night. The only way to put an end to this danse macabre is by fire and sword.
Marching drum, we'll win the war and pay the toll. We'll fight as one in heart and soul. Midnight mare and blood red roan, fight to keep this land your own. Sound the horn and call the cry. How many of them can we make die?
Axes flash, broadswords swing, shining armors piercing ring. Houses run with a polished shield. Fight those bastards till they yield.
Midnight mare, blood red roan, fight to keep this land.
Being who we are, white Americans of the early 21st century, we will do anything, perform any feat of mental and semantic acrobatics to avoid having to face up to inconvenient and unpalatable truths, especially this one. Our capacity for self-deception is limitless. Peter, Paul, and Mary once sang, "How many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see?" Well, where white people are concerned, the number of times we can turn our heads is infinite. We're especially good at turning our heads while looking in a mirror. We know what we're seeing in that mirror, and most of us have the good grace to be ashamed of it, and so we turn our heads and we pretend that we just don't see. We want the present system magically to fix itself, which ain't gonna happen. We're really screwed, guys. Actual revolution in America is just plain beyond our comprehension. We simply cannot wrap our minds around the possibility that such a thing could be. We have been raised from birth with the idea of one nation indivisible under God, which is codswallop. Nowhere is it chiseled in stone by God or anyone else that the North American continent absolutely must be politically united into one national entity for all eternity until the crack of doom. Manifest destiny is horseshit. History and human realities don't work like that. Anything and everything is possible for mankind. Human beings create their own reality, and we can create a new one here if we ever get up off our lazy, frightened asses. Every other continent on the face of the earth has many countries on it, and eventually so will our continent. We all know perfectly well that the niggers and spicks and third world trash ain't going nowhere unless massive amounts of violence are applied to their dusky hides. Lacking weapons of mass destruction, no one's going to do that. And we can't either. The MUDs are here on this continent to stay until such time as someone acquires the weapons of mass destruction and the willingness to use them, which isn't going to happen. What can happen, what is possible, what we've already seen within living memory in the breakup of the Soviet Union, is that at some point in the future, when the federal government becomes too weak and incompetent to maintain control and loses the credible monopoly of armed force, we can divide up the American pie. The question is, will the white man get any slice of the pie at all? Only recently are Americans beginning, hesitantly, ever so timidly, to dip their toes into the waters of this particular idea. And that's one of the reasons I wrote my novels and will be writing my fifth, so that you can get some idea of what it might be like in the real world for white people to have their own country like the Jews do. But for now, being who we are, and having been born and raised where and when we were born and raised, what we really want is a truly American solution, a quick and painless fix that costs us nothing, or that we can at least get a coupon for. With our American sense of entitlement, this is naturally what we seek. But the clock has run out. Playtime is over. Now, this year, this month, this day, the real thing begins. I have to keep on trying. Failure or quitting simply isn't an option because, yes, Virginia, we really are out of time now. I have to keep on sifting the thousands of emails I get for those tiny few, who at least appear to have the potential to be a man if I can somehow find the right key to it all. The genetic trait that imparts to our people their unique Aryan character, integrity, idealism, and physical courage seems to have become largely dormant over the past 50 years, probably due to the massive loss to our gene pool during both world wars, when all the white alpha males went to the front and slaughtered one another, and the cowards stayed behind the lines as staff officers, bureaucrats, etc. That alpha male gene seems to have been bred out of us for all practical purposes. The number of white males who retain it are so few that they're not even a remnant. They're just genetic flukes, throwbacks, what's called sports in animal breeding, when an individual suddenly shows traits from many generations back. But I have to find them. I need to find 1,000 white people, male or female, who still have the alpha gene. And if I can concentrate that 1,000 people in a few key places here in the Northwest, and I can give them a program of action to follow, they could still tip the balance. All I can do is keep on begging you guys to look in that mirror, and if you don't like what you see, then don't turn away. You know what you have to do. It's not that you can't do it. It's that you won't do it. But you can change that. The road is open for you to be a man again. The road of courage and self-worth, of pride and honor, and eventually of glory, lies open for you just as much as it ever lay open for any Aryan man since the dawn of time. It's the road northwest. Well, our time is up, and so that's it for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front. Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington 98194. Or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sasha Andaban. Freedom.